Hello and welcome to the Eating Disorder Therapist podcast. This is a podcast to help you find peace with food and overcome disordered eating. And I'm Harriet Frew, aka the Eating Disorder Therapist. And I'm so excited to share with you all kinds of stories, tips, information and guest interviews to help you on your journey in finding peace with food. So thank you so much for listening today. Now today I'm talking to Safi Abdi, a qualified and experienced bariatric and emotional eating therapist and host of the Gastric Mindset podcast. For over 25 years, Safi has worked with both adults and children battling with poor mental health and addictions, along with having personally grappled with chronic weight issues for over 3 decades. Safi knows firsthand the challenges of yo-yo dieting and the frustrations of regaining the same weight repeatedly. Today, Safi supports others to break free from the diet trap after weight loss surgery, and she helps her clients to develop a mindset that will safeguard their weight loss, conquer emotional eating and binge eating, and start meaningful behavior change. In the episode today, we're going to hear all about Safi's own healing journey and then explore more about the valuable work that she is doing with her clients today. Let's get to the conversation.
Hi, Safi. Welcome to the Eating Disorder Therapist podcast.
Thank you. Thank you for having me, Harriet.
So, Safi, for those people who don't know you, could you introduce yourself to the listeners, please?
My name is Safi. I am a mom of 2 from London, and I am currently a therapeutic coach, but almost at the end of my counseling qualification also.
Okay, thank you. So Safi, I know you've been on a journey, haven't you, with a relationship with food, weight loss surgery, all of it. Could you kind of take us through your journey, kind of synopsis of your life that's brought you to this point?
Yes. Actually, I'm bariatric and emotional eating therapeutic coach. I forgot to add that a little bit. So that's what I call myself these days. So my journey is one that started very young with food, going back to perhaps when I was about 7 years old, we came to England from Somalia. We fled war almost in the middle of the night. I think everything changed within a couple of months. And I know in the UK and all around the world, it would have been on the TV and it was a civil war in Somalia. So it was quite heavy. But being a young child going through that, fleeing with my mother in the middle of the night, we were scared people coming into cars and taking people out who had different accents or were from the wrong tribe. So it was really scary as a child. We lived through that for couple of months, what seemed like a long time in my young life. But anyway, and then we ended up in a refugee camp. So we fled to the next country and then we were all put in a refugee camp. And then in this refugee camp, water and bread will be thrown in twice a day. And my mum had 4 of us and I was the oldest of 4 children. I remember being 7, 8-ish possibly. Oh, maybe she was pregnant with the last one. So maybe 3 or 4, I can't quite remember. And my mum would have to try to get enough to feed all of us. And so we would go days without having enough food. Luckily, we were not there for too long. The Red Cross saved us. We came over to England. But in regards to my eating, it all started there because of that period of not having food. And from what I know, my body would have gone into starvation mode, which would have made a perfect storm for disordered eating. But anyway, so we land in England and the best story I ever tell is that actually in our first night in England, somehow we ended up in a chippy in East London. And for Americans, what's chips again in Americans?
French fries.
Yeah. Anyway, full on English fish and chips. The chips was potato and it was almost love at first sight, me and potato. It was that amazing warm, it was like a warm embrace in a foreign land where everybody looked different, everybody sounded different, everything was scary, the cars and the hustle and bustle of London. For the next 4 to 5 years, my parents struggled to settle in. I start school and I missed those formative years of education. And then there's also undiagnosed dyslexia there. So I really struggled with school. I was different. I looked different in every way, Harriet. I sounded different. I dressed different. I looked different. And my parents were really petrified because they heard through the grapevine that children get kidnapped in England or social services come and take your children. So my parents were petrified that we were going to get removed. And we spent a lot of time inside. So we didn't go out often. They didn't drive. But we still very much ate like we were back in a hot country, in a hot African country, where a lot of starchy food, a lot of rice, a lot of meat, all mixed together. So I ate a lot because we were still quite poor in the 90s. Living in England was not so bad. It's not like today. We were looked after by benefits. However, it was still very difficult. So we would get huge sacks of potato, huge sacks of rice. And yeah, carbohydrate coma, right? I would come back from school where I found it really hard. I didn't have any friends. And then I would eat food. And that made me really happy. And then in the 90s, Harriet, school dinners were all custard and cakes and all that yummy stuff. So I really looked forward to that as well, because that was all very new to me also, all those English stuff. I looked forward to that in school. So then as I went through school and I reached my teenage years, I realized I was a lot bigger than everybody else. And then it was fine as an African girl, a smiley girl. I think the more shapy you are, the more attractive you were considered. But then I realized, oh no, this is a problem. I'm fat. Then I discovered that my friends would just have shakes. Some of them, I would miss lunch. So for somebody who really loved lunch times and food and it gave me such a comfort, now I had the shame around it because I went to school with a lot of girls who were a lot smaller, South Asian girls who were a lot petiter. And I thought, if they think they're fat and they're not happy with the way they look, then I definitely should be worried about it. So then I started having these feelings towards myself of guilt and disgust. I'm greedy. Why can't I? Then I started to not eat food. I would go days without eating food, Harriet. And then I think there was a 1 week, my dad still tells this story. I had cucumber for the week and then I would have horrible stretch marks. It kind of just continued. So it was almost a gateway into this world that I know of disordered eating, and I would restrict and binge and go on every diet. And the more money I made, the more I graduated to try, and I discovered dieting clubs and I joined them. And then I discovered things like Herbalife. And then that led to Lighter Life and Cambridge and one after the other. And the more I was working, earning, the more I would go and go to Harley Street and get pills. And at one stage, I got this particular, I can never remember the name, but actually it was inserted. So a tube was inserted in my nose and I would carry protein water for a week. I can't remember what the name was, but I had to have it taken out because I started seeing things. So I guess my blood sugar had dropped so much. So Harriet, I tried every single diet. And then in 2015-14, I was doing my social work degree and life got just really, really hard. And I went to my GP. And at this stage, I must have been at my biggest, probably 18 and a half stones, which would be, I think, 110 kg or something along those lines. And I went to my GP and I said to him, I've listed all the diets that I tried. I got a personal trainer. I can't do it. Every time I go on a diet, I stick to it. I lose 3 stones, then I end up putting on more. So I was desperate. The GP said to me, well, you need some antidepressants. So he gave me some antidepressants. And I remember I had awful sciatica. I was crying. Obviously, he could see I was distressed, but I had nothing else to give me. He didn't signpost me anywhere, Harriet. He didn't give me a leaflet for anybody. We had all joked all the time. My mom struggled with her weight. And I think that was all to do with what she saw in the war. And she struggled for years. Mobility got really bad. And then she ended up dependent on really strong painkillers. And she had her own struggles and eventually died of comorbidities in 2021. So nobody had ever really said, let's help you with this weight. You're not losing it. Something's going on here. Maybe weight management. Nobody had ever suggested any kind of weight management support or anything like that. We've always joked about having your mouth stapled and that being a thing. And I remember thinking, well, I don't think you can actually get your mouth stapled. And then I looked it up and then I saw, oh, weight loss surgery. And then that was it. I was on a mission. And within a couple of weeks, I was in Belgium And I did think about going on the NHS route, but then I looked in the forums and I realized, oh, I may have to gain some more weight. Or that's how desperate I was, Harriet. I even contemplated, if only I had diabetes, then I would qualify. And then within 2 weeks, I was in Belgium having a gastric band. So that was the start of my journey with weight loss. I had that in and out. I was on the train. I was back home. And, you know, I lost weight. Then I got pregnant. But one thing I realized was I was still using the band to abuse food. I was getting it really filled. I was getting it really filled with band. They could put water in and out. And I think in America, they call it lap band, which is not used very much now, but they put fluid in and out. If you say to them that you can drink the water will go down, then you couldn't swallow. So I did that because for a long time before that, I would spend a lot of time on anisites and trying different things. And so I abused that. I realized I'm continuing to abuse this tool. You know, I got pregnant and then Harry, I realized 90% of my time is consumed by weight or what I want to eat or feeling guilty or on Pinterest. And I had a young baby and that really triggered my diet, what I call now dieting trauma, which I definitely think exists. And then all my local moms were talking about snapping back, getting back in shape. I was really obsessed and I realized there's something going on here deeper than I need to just, it's not that, okay, I've reduced my stomach by 80%, but there's still more going on. So then I looked for a therapist. And at this time, I know stuff about therapy and I couldn't find anybody who could comprehend the fact that I have weight loss surgery, but I'm still struggling with controlling my thoughts around food. So I looked for somebody who could understand. At this point, I didn't know much about binge eating disorder. I didn't know that that was another thing that was going on in my life. I would continue to everything that would go down until I was sick. And then I went down this rabbit hole and then I realized that I've developed binge eating disorder and I had struggled with it. And then I came across several different podcasts, your podcast, and I started educating myself around that. And then that's when I decided to go down this route of wanting to help people who had the same experiences as I. And for them to feel heard and understood. And that's when I decided I was going to train and I to do some coaching training and, yeah, my counseling training. So that's basically my nutshell of my start of my journey with discovering that I was struggling with disordered eating and wanting to get the bariatric surgery done, yeah.
Time for a short advertisement break. Now, I know we talk a lot about food freedom on this podcast and how important it is to take care of yourself mentally and physically as you learn to navigate a culture inundated with toxic messaging. One of the best ways to take care of yourself is through exercise, but I know it can be really hard to find an exercise program that isn't rooted in these toxic messages and doesn't feel triggering. Well, I recently met Katie, the owner of an amazing new exercise company called WeShape. WeShape doesn't focus on calorie counting, tracking how much you work out, or making you feel bad about your body to get you motivated. Instead, they create a customized exercise routine for you that helps you connect with and care for your body rather than feel the pressure to change it. They help you learn to set intentions that come from a place of self-care rather than self-judgment, and they support you every step of the way with an amazing community and live coaching so you can make exercise a self-care practice that helps you feel better in your body and about your body. Plus, they're giving listeners of the show the chance to try it out for 2 full weeks for free. Just head on over to weshape.com/freedom or check out the link in the show notes to get started today.
Oh, goodness. Well, thank you for sharing, Safi, because I had no idea, actually, of your story and your history. You know, I've only kind of interacted a few times, haven't we? Mm-hmm. But, you know, really appreciate you sharing that, because I feel like you've had layer upon layer upon layer, haven't you, of that very early trauma. Sounds like so unsettling and frightening for a young child. Coming to a strange country, and then the whole thing about fitting in and the different culture and then also dyslexia and all thrown of that.
And I think on the ACES score, I think the first time I did that score, I scored very high on it, as you can imagine. So with all that, I'm glad I had food, Harriet, and I'm grateful for food. That's all I had. And it was a coping mechanism that served me well until it doesn't serve you. That's all addictions. That's all. But I think food works in comforting you. It's so instant. We used to have panic attacks. And as soon as I ate something quite starchy, I would feel better automatically. So with me and food, we've always had that history. And I've moved away from a place of, because I also have that dieting mentality of sins, falling off the wagon, all that shame of being in diet groups and demonizing food. And now I've got to a place of actually appreciating what food gave me. There was a time I had no food and my body thought I was going to die. But realizing that complexity of, I just wasn't greedy. My body was at risk, and then he decided to do what he needed to do to keep me alive, to preserve me. And then learning about things like set points and genetic, epigenetics, and the fact that my body would have had to slow down my metabolism in order for me to stay alive. And knowing all that gives me so much peace. And I, now with the people I talk to, I work with, okay, maybe some of them haven't gone through war, but they've gone through other traumas, and food is what they had available to them at that time. And my relationship with food is changed now, and I don't see it as my enemy anymore. I used to despise my relationship with food. I think I'm in remission. I'm in recovery. I don't think I'll ever be fully, you know, healed from my, I'll always have a disordered relationship. But now I recognize it. I haven't weighed myself for 2 years. I work on a very balanced view of food. It's there to fuel me. And I try to really listen to my body. And that's what I want to put across on Instagram and everybody I touch, is that you're not weak. It's not a fault. It's not a personality trait. And you're not just a failure. You're not weaker than everybody else. Because a lot of the times I thought, how come I can do hard things, right? I can learn how to read. I taught myself how to read in my teens. I was able to do a degree. I was able to survive so much. But how come I couldn't lose a stone in 6 weeks like everybody else, or like in the magazines? For a long time, I was so confused. And that's why I love what you do and what all the community that now that we're part of does. And I'm aware that sometimes we could be in this group of people and we all think we all know everything, but there's people who still very much don't know any of these things and still live in that cycle of joining another diet on Monday and feeling really bad when they fall off a restrictive diet by 12 o'clock and then going around in that cycle.
I think you're right, actually, because I think sometimes we are in the echo chamber, aren't you? Like people like you and myself, we tend to think, the world is embracing intuitive eating, etc. But you only need to like have a conversation with someone in Tesco's or something to realize actually that most of the world are not.
It's wild. You know, in the bariatric community, we hang around a lot in these groups on Facebook and so on. And sometimes I have to just switch off because I want to answer everybody back. And being dyslexic takes me ages to write a comment. But I just realized, actually, a lot of people go, especially now abroad, Harriet, go and have the operation. Nobody really says much to you. I had a piece of paper. It was barely readable by my GP. And then come back here and nothing's changed. The environment hasn't changed. They're not getting anymore. We go on these groups and then everybody's then discussing pouch resets and go back to just liquids. I'm like, oh God, we just really traumatize each other.
Well, look, I think that's the thing, isn't it? Because I guess coming back to bariatric surgery, it's a tool, isn't it? Like it can be a very helpful tool, but it's not going to fix your relationship with food or your psychology around food. I think so many people just aren't aware of that, are they? So I guess that's an important message that you're really trying to spread, is it?
Yeah, and I think they can live together. You could have disordered eating and have weight loss surgery, and those two still need to exist. And I think the NHS, you know, you had an obesity problem. I know some people don't like that, but that's the medical word. Or you have an eating disorder problem. It's those two. No, you could have both. And eventually, most people would have done enough dieting for it to really throw you off and put you into disordered eating on some aspect. And I think a lot of people are not aware of that. They live in this place of shame and say, oh, I broke the tool again. Oh, I failed my gastric sleeve again. Or I know the body was always going to want to get back to its set point where it feels safe. It's always going to want to return to your highest weight unless you've been a new weight for long enough. and it touches biology and it touches science. It doesn't mean anything about your character. You're not a weak person. You haven't done anything wrong. You haven't broken anything. But how do we do that bridge? Because I often, Harriet, when we're talking to people pre-weight loss surgery, I always think, actually, we don't have the headspace for real change before then. Because our head, we're so cluttered. We're so desperate. We think weight loss will be the answer. Actually, that period of that honeymoon when we have lost the weight and we've got brain space to learn new tools or see things more clearly, that's where I think change can really happen. Meaningful change can really happen. Because before, Harriet, with all the tea in China, you couldn't stop me from getting on that train.
I can imagine. I can imagine. I mean, yeah, you were so down the rabbit hole, weren't you? You're like just desperate, weren't you? And I guess this just offered the solution, didn't it?
Yeah, the Holy Grail. What? I cut half of my stomach out and sort it all out or whatever you're going to do to it. And then that minute, I think it's almost so destroying, or you think, I felt so let down. Almost like, oh my God, what else can I do? I've tried everything. I've risked my life. I put myself under anesthesia to get this sorted. And then to almost feel that overwhelming feeling, because I guess it's all, the more you worry about something, the more your cortisol releases, the more than I needed food to calm that part of my brain down. It's really hard, especially if you're alone. It's really, really difficult. And then if you then rely on a community, which is also a group of people who've failed so many times, who live with this cycle of shame, then we just kind of continue that. So for me, my passion is to break that, and people like you with your podcast and educating people that actually there may be more going on here. It's not that you just can't stop eating all the pies or something silly like that. But I really like that. And I'm passionate about, I hate the idea of people risking their lives, like I said, changing their whole biology or the way that their body works for the rest of their lives, and then having to return back to a dieting group that you did 100 times before. And if it was going to work, it would have worked. So that makes me really angry, because let's face it, Weight Watchers and Steaming World and those groups, their whole, I guess, business is on reoccurring. People going to keep on coming back. We all keep on coming back. So that's my mission now. I don't know how I'm going to take them down, but that is my mission.
You'll have to come back on, Safi, as well, I think, because it would be great to explore even more about some of the ways that you're working and to dive a bit deeper into some of these areas. But I just think with sort of time today, but for people that are listening, because I'm sure people will be interested in your podcast, maybe to get in touch about working with you. So tell the audience how to find you.
Yay, thank you. So I have a podcast called the Gastric Mindset Podcast, and my Instagram is by the same name, Gastric Mindset. I'm a season 3, so I have interviewed lovely Harriet on there as well. So we've got an amazing interview there. But yeah, come on. I interview experts and I want that information. But I also interview people who've gone through it, who really understand. And it's a lot of fun with some of the conversations, because we just go down memory lane about all the dieting craziness we've taken part in. And also just drop me a message on Gastric Mindset. I'm developing a new group. I'm passionate about making sure that people can access therapy or coaching. I know it's not accessible for everybody. And that's really important to me, that actually, just because you're not part of society that can afford to pay for therapy, that especially for people who go abroad, they've already spent thousands of pounds. Yeah, so I'm working on that. Same prices as Slimming World Week. And yeah, you'll get a lot more, less shame, and it'll be great. Thank you, Harriet.
Okay, well, fantastic, Safi. Well, I shall make sure that all those links are in the show notes. And you've got a book as well, maybe, coming. Have you? I mean, I don't know. Sorry.
Well, I do. And you heard it here first. It's also going to be featuring your one and only Harriet.
Yeah, well, let's see. Got to write it first.
You said it here, Harriet. Accountability, everybody. Wonderful. Thank you so much. Yes, I have. Hopefully in the summer.
Okay, brilliant. Okay, well, Safi, thank you so much for coming on today. And you'll definitely have to come back and tell us more about this whole world, because I think I'm sure so many of the listeners are going to relate to this. Anyway, so thank you so much. Really appreciate it.
Thank you, Harriet.
So I hope you enjoyed this conversation just as much as I did. And do go and check out all of Safi's info in the show notes. If you're not following me already on Instagram, do seek me out at @theeatingdisordertherapist_. And for further support with your relationship with food, do go to theeatingdisordertherapist.co.uk. If you're a professional listening and you're interested in gaining more expertise in working with clients with eating disorders, you might be interested in my Eating Disorders and Body Image online courses. Link in the show notes if you're interested. If you enjoy this podcast, I would be so grateful if you'd follow, rate and review, as it helps it reach so many more listeners. Thank you so much for listening today, and I look forward to sharing another podcast episode with you very soon.